If you have your syllabus, take your syllabus out real quick, and let's just review kind of what I said on the email to make sure we know how to study and prepare. Invite of the world here for 3 hours. I went and told him it was not cold enough. It doesn't work. The man upstairs, like figuratively, but literally, the man upstairs controls that, so that you have no control there.
Should we close the door?
Close the door? I don't know if that would decrease or increase circulation. I'm not sure. So, we'll leave it open just in case, so we don't get claustrophobic with the lack of air. Okay, so if you have your syllabus and you look at the class schedule on page 4, the left column shows which assignments are due today. So, what is due for the 15th?
Quiz and vocabulary cards.
There'll be a quiz and vocabulary cards. So that means you were to have brought your vocab cards with you today, right? Yes.
What about exercise 4?
There is no exercise 4 there.
But you told us you needed to turn that in, and you didn't turn it in last week.
Yeah, last week we graded it, but I let you keep it. So technically it was due last week, but I wanted you to be able to have the backside of that if you wanted to read. So, yeah, we'll turn that in today later. But then the middle column there is our discussion for today. And then the far right side is the reading. L stands for Lamerson, right? And that's this book. And I could ask quiz questions from here, too. Little sighs and murmurs going on. Really cute. I won't do that today. But if I assign reading, then you're always on the hook for the reading for that day. Okay? And then what does M stand for?
Mounts,
right. Most of our readings will be from here. So you're really to have pre-read the material before you come to class, feel super overwhelmed with it, and then we talk about it in class and start to straighten it out. It's much easier to take the clay and then start shaping it rather than handing out clay when you get here. I'd rather have you be kind of feel like a big mushy brain, you know, when you come into class, but there's stuff in there that we can begin to massage and shape and mold and everything when we come to class, and then you'll do the homework and that'll shape it even more, and then we come back and we kind of finalize it. So it's a lot of steps of working with the material, but that first reading is your first stab at the material. So you almost will go over the same material almost 4 times that way. And that's just going to really increase your chances to comprehend it and retain it. Really super important. So after today's class, we will start to find our groove in the schedule and the reading of new material, current material, past material, like we talked about in the syllabus. So we're after today, we move beyond introductions really into kind of the rhythm of the class and how it's going to go. So that's exciting too, how the learning is going to build on itself. Okay? All right? So, let's do this. Let's take out a sheet of paper and hide our resources. Make sure you don't have anything like flashcards, writing materials, open grammar, Quizlet.com on your iPhone, return the call.
Oh.
Ed. Yes.
Quizlet has stopped its association with flashcards.
They basically, they're like Amazon. They've turned off the ability for third-party apps to import.
Okay.
But there's actually a Quizlet app.
Right.
Yeah. So you're left with that. Yeah, that's a bummer. They got selfish. All these other people helped them build an empire, and then they took it away. All right, so typically how it's going to go, I won't always have a pre-typed quiz for you. So, I don't have one today. The first thing you're going to do on your quiz is you're going to write out your alphabet. Okay? And so, just from left to right, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, just go ahead and write your alphabet out on your sheet. And... what?
Circle the
vowels. Second part of that will be vocab. And I'll put those up here for you on the board. This is not a community quiz. Individual quiz here. All right, so I'll read those for you. Logos, pneuma, kai, theos, anthropos, angelos, prophetes, apostolos, graphe, cosmos. Now what you need to do is just give me the English definition. At least one of them. Yes.
How do you pronounce number three again?
I'm saying it pneuma, not pneuma. I'm not making a break right here.
Because I thought, I could be completely wrong, but I thought when I read in the reading, it actually said that you do pronounce it.
Yeah. Okay. Pneuma.
No, it doesn't sound right to me at all.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. No, that's what I read too. English definition right.
That was my same question, so.
Okay. We can pull up the canon of mounts and listen to him. That way we'll know how they said it in ancient Greece.
Excellent.
Yeah. Or with the Palestinian dialect. Okay, are we done? Just about? Who needs another minute? Okay, one more minute. Okay, are we done? That's good. All right, trade papers. Okay, let's do vocab first. Make sure you're grading in something other than pencil. Oh yeah, circle your vowels. Did you circle your vowels?
No.
Okay, we ready? Are we ready? Okay. Logos.
Word.
What's the range of definition for that? word, capital word, right?
Statement.
You could have statement or message. As long as you had one of those. Pneuma. Or pneuma.
Spirit.
Spirit or capital spirit. Wind. Breath. Inner life. So any one of those. What's the pneumatology is the study of what? The Holy Spirit. Kai. And even also namely. So you had at least one of those. Theos. Could have been capital G God or lowercase g God. Anthropos. Anthropos. Man, mankind, person, people, humankind, human being. The odds go up the more chances of translation there. Angelos. Angelos. Could have been angel or messenger. Prophetes. Alright, prophetes. Prophet. Apostolos. Apostolos. Could have been apostle, envoy. I'm sure you remembered that one.
Yeah.
Part of your normal vocabulary, right? Messenger. Messenger. Graphe. Graphe. Could have been writing or scripture, like holy writing. As a noun. Cosmos. Cosmos. The study of the cosmos, cosmology, the world, universe, or humankind. Any questions on that part? Okay. Some room up here. How many of you got a 10 on it? How many of you got a 9? An 8? Raise it proudly.
Raise it.
Okay. All right, let's do the alphabet. Correct me if I miss it here. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon,
zeta,
theta, theta, yoda,
Kappa,
lambda, mu, nu, c, omicron, p, rho, sigma, final sigma, tau, upsilon, phi, chi, psi, omega. I was teaching Hebrew this morning again, and it's messing me up. Okay. All right, vowels.
Alpha,
epsilon, eta, yoda,
omicron,
upsilon, omega. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, here's how the grading for that works. Is you have 10 points to work with for each. So the quiz is worth 20 points. So obviously the vocab, each one's worth a point. The alphabet and vowels, you have 10 points to work with. If you use up all 10 points, like a game show, if you use up all 10 points, that's all there is. All right? So after you've missed, which is kind of good because if you missed all 25, you couldn't get a negative 25. You could only get a negative 10. So once you've used up your 10 points, you have to actually get the characters and the circling the vowels. Now, if they mess a letter up and the sequence gets, but then they get back to the sequence again, that's fine. You don't have to take a point off for each letter after that. I mean, if they miss like these three right here, but then they got the rest of them, that's okay. You know, don't count these off too. Just count off. They missed. Basically, each letter needs to be there, and it needs to be in the right order. And be merciful. Any questions on that? I know some of you weren't here last week for the quiz. Okay, so 10 points for the alphabet and vowels, 10 points for your vocabulary. So total possible is 20. Okay? Now, if you take out your vocabulary cards, if you bought them, alright, today, you may have 3 extra points if you bought them. If you wrote them, you may have 5 extra points. Yes.
Are we able to buy them and write them?
No, it's one or the other. Yeah, sorry.
Still buy.
If you design them on cupcakes, that would count toward an alphabet on cupcakes, that counts towards this right, 5 points. That's a super amount of effort, so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do we add the points to our own paper, or do we have...
No, that would be for you, not for your next-door neighbor. You would get the points, not
them. Yeah, okay, yeah, so but I'm saying, since we're grading each other,
you need to show the person next to you your vocabulary card.
Okay.
If you didn't bring your... If you didn't bring vocabulary cards, then there's no extra points.
So could you,
what?
Is it out of 25? Would it be like 25 out of 20?
You could.
Or is it just a
little? Does this apply to you? Did you earn 25?
Yeah.
Okay, so potentially you could earn a 25 out of 20 on this quiz. Now, next time we have a vocabulary card check, it won't be extra credit. Okay, it'll be required. Just bridging you here on the vocabulary. Okay, now, do you have any questions regarding how to prepare for the vocabulary? When you have vocabulary at the end of a chapter, and we go over it in class, that'll be quizzed, you know, for the next time, right? Do you have any questions about how to prepare for that? What's my recommendation? Do you guys remember? Write them. Write the Greek word 3 times, 5 times, just the Greek words. Then go back, close your book, and see if you can write the definition out. So write it out 3-5 times, write the definition out. This is that repetition. Then the vocabulary cards are to reinforce that. But the way to get it into your brain, you need muscle memory from the pencil to do that over and over and over again. Okay? All right, so that's the way to learn the new vocabulary. Now, here's the catcher. Is the vocabulary is comprehensive. So that means the vocabulary we had this week, you are still on the hook for next week as we add vocabulary. You guys remember my rings of cards?
Yeah.
Right? The rings got heavier and heavier as the semester went on as you were carrying around all those cards. So, and that's why I like to put the little chapter number on the back of the card too. Kind of, if I end up shuffling them, and later on I want to put them back in the right chapters, I have that written on the back of the card like that. Okay? Alright, so let's pass those quizzes in. Make sure there's a name and a date on the quiz. Yes.
For the quizzes, for the vocab, will it be like a list today, or will we have to, like, maybe eventually write out the...
No, I'll always give you the word. Yeah.
Trying to make it harder. Are you always going to pronounce them for us?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
But we'll read them aloud the first time you see them. So when we finish another chapter that has vocab in it, we'll review the vocab together. And then just to help you out when we come back, I'll say them out loud again. Or we lost somebody. Okay. So how does that feel?
Good.
That was all right?
Instead of writing God for Theos, I wrote Theos on my quiz.
Starting to think Greek. That's good. That's good. Preaching a dream, Theos. So. That's all right. That's basically it. We'll have about 10 words each time. And they'll probably be pulled from the most recent list when I'm going after those 10. But if there's a word that I know that we're like struggling with, then I'll come back to probably see that word more often. But, yeah.
Should we write the, I'm not sure if I have the right term, but transliteration?
No, transliteration bad.
It is?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's bad. There's no reason to, we don't need to focus on learning transliteration.
Okay.
We want the translation.
Okay.
The transliteration means kind of phonetically how it spells out.
Yeah.
No, we don't worry about that. Yeah, the day you weren't here, we were talking about that.
Okay.
And you used to have to learn all the transliteration signs and symbols and things like that for pronouncing things. And yeah, no, we're not going to do that. So just recognize the Greek lettering and what the translation is.
Okay, because sometimes it's like anthropos, and then the meaning is man, but I want to say anthropology constantly when
yeah.
I say that.
Yeah, okay. That's okay. But, I mean, that might help you. That might help you remember it better. Okay, on page 20 of our grammar, let's take out page 20. There's an overview of where we're going in chapters 5 through 9. This is something that you should be reading on your... on your own. But basically, he gives you a little synopsis of each chapter in the upcoming section. So chapter 5, he's introducing us to nouns. Chapter 6, he's talking about different kinds of noun cases. The subject case, the object case. We talked about that last week a little bit. Chapter 7, he goes on to show us that there's a possession case and a genitive case. Indirect object case. Then chapter 8, we'll meet prepositions, which are really fun and exciting. They are. Chapter 9, we'll get to adjectives. And then he gives some examples in that. And I don't want to confuse you, so we won't read anymore. Right there. Chapter 5, page 22. So at this point, you want to have a yellow highlighter and a pencil with you as we kind of go through this, which you were to have already read. But as you're getting used to that kind of schedule, I'll assume maybe some of us didn't. Okay, chapter 5 introduces us to English nouns. You also had a chapter in Lamerson that goes over nouns too. And this is helping you with the English side of it. So if you haven't done that reading, make sure you do that. Alright? In this chapter, he says, we'll learn terms that we use in grammar, like inflection and case, number, gender, lexical form. These are words that you need to now have as part of your vocabulary as you discuss grammar. You'll learn other things such as the definite article, the predicate nominative. Remember we talked about that last time. And declension. Parts of speech like nouns and adjectives and prepositions, subjects, predicates. And a little bit about verbs just to help us until next semester. He says, as strange as it may seem, the first major obstacle many of you must overcome is your lack of knowledge of Greek grammar. That's not a very positive way to say that, but that's okay. For whatever reasons, many do not know enough English grammar to learn Greek. I cannot teach about the Greek nominative case until you know what a case is. You must learn to crawl before walking. For this reason, I begin our discussion of Greek nouns with a short introduction to English grammar. And at the beginning of every chapter, I will introduce some of the finer points of English grammar that are relevant. All right, look at 5.2, inflection. What does inflection mean? I started using that word the first day. Basically, it means
change.
It means change. So if a word inflects, what does it do?
It
changes. A word might change its form when it performs different functions. Okay? So, change happens based upon function. What would be some of the ways a word could function in a sentence? It might function as a subject or an object. Okay. So, the car hit the wall. What is the subject?
Car.
But what if I say the bus hit the car? How is car functioning? Is the object. Now, did the words change?
No.
No. It didn't. So, there's not any inflection there, is there? Not any change there. What if I said, I like to drive cars? Did I just change it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did. I made it
plural.
What case?
Subjective.
I like to drive cars.
Objective.
It's still the object, right?
Yeah.
It's down here. Cars. Okay, so this in this case, the change did not come because of function. It came because of number. So you might have change in a word because the number changes. Now, what if I said he likes to go to the store? What is he functioning as?
Subject.
The subject, right? He likes to go to the store. Store is the object, right?
Yeah.
Now, what if I said she likes to go to the store? What's this change?
It's subject.
Huh?
Subject.
It's still the subject, but what changed?
Gender.
There's gender change, right? She likes to go to the store. So sometimes you might have change because of gender. So you can see words change for a lot of different reasons. And that's the basics of it. Inflection means change. All right, so second dot. A word might also change its form when its meaning changes. Oh, look at that. He just gave the same example as I did. He or she. If you have a son and he's the child of a king or a queen, he's a prince. If there's two of them, there's princes. But what if it's a girl? Princess. So, same word, but it changes depending upon the meaning. All these changes are an example of inflection. English is not highly inflected, but Greek is. But also much more predictable than English. All right, 5.3, case. Words perform different functions in a sentence. Everyone say function.
Function.
Yes, that just reminded me of a Schoolhouse Rock song right there. Okay, all right. These different functions are called cases. So, you have in English the subjective, the objective, and the possessive case. Case tells you function. Some English words change their form when they switch functions. Other words basically stay the same. Subjective case, the subject. It performs the action of the verb. Subject is usually the first noun in English. Bill ran to the store. Does everyone see where I'm reading right there? Yes?
Yes.
Yeah? Everyone? Yeah? Okay. However, sometimes it's hard to determine which word is the subject. You can usually find out by asking the question, who or what? Like, who ran to the store? Bill. Possessive case. The word shows possession. It's possessive. It's his Greek Bible. It's his bed. Objective case. The objective case. If a word is in the direct object, it is in the objective case. The direct object is the person or thing that is directly affected by the action of the verb. This means that whatever the verb does, it's doing that to the direct object. The teacher will flunk him if he does not take it seriously. Greek, that is. So, what's the subject there in that sentence? Teacher. What is the verb? Flunk. What is the direct object? Him. That's not very positive, is it? He's saying that to be funny. Okay. The direct object, this is the next page, 24, usually follows the verb in word order. So the direct object, Robin passed her test, or the waiter insulted Brian. Those are all direct objects. You can usually determine the direct object by asking yourself the question, what or whom? Robin passed what? Her test. And you can see that little chart right there. Subject, possession, direct object, and the italicized word is an illustration for each. Okay. Any questions? Just fourth grade, fifth grade grammar at this point, right? Way back, except for Caleb. Okay, 5.4. Number. Words can either be singular or plural, depending upon whether they refer to one or more than one. For example, students should learn to study like this student. Whoever got a 25 today. So, they can change because of that. Gender. Some words, mostly pronouns, change their form depending upon whether they're referring to masculine, feminine, or neuter. For example, he gave it to her. Another example is the word prince, like we saw either. Look at the last sentence under that section, under gender. If a word refers to a masculine, if it does not refer to neither a masculine or a feminine thing, then you have a neuter gender. Now, this next paragraph, 5.6, is very important for you to compartmentalize two different kinds of gender. This is foundational to help you not be confused at this moment. I'm earmarking this for you right now. Okay? There are two different kinds of gender. There is natural gender and grammatical gender. What are the two kinds?
Natural
and grammatical. All right, now let's read this. Natural gender means that a word takes on the gender of the object it represents. We refer to a rock as an it because we do not regard the rock as male or female. But we refer to a man as he and a woman as she. That's natural gender. Pronouns, obvious to see that in pronouns. Because we associate a pronoun with a noun someplace. right? Okay, in Greek, pronouns follow natural gender, but nouns, for the most part, do not. Hamartia is a feminine noun meaning sin, although sin is not a female concept. Even though guys might disagree, but that it is not. Hamartolos. Why can't I say that word? Hamartolos can be a masculine noun meaning sinner. Although sinner is not a masculine concept. So, this, he's not labeling this here, I'm labeling it for you. This is grammatical gender. Yes.
In Greek, is the word sin, like, is it always, like, a feminine way?
Yeah.
Because going through, like, the Book of Proverbs and stuff, they do, like, feminize that whole section when it's, like, talking about sin and stuff. Is that because of the translation?
No, it's not.
Is it?
Nope. Proverbs 1 is written in Hebrew.
Yeah, I knew that. But
yeah, different, totally different language, yeah. So what's happening in there is you have what's called a literary device. So like wisdom, Proverbs 8, is personified as feminine, right? That would be something like when they build a ship and they say, boy, she's a beauty. So they're ascribing a gender to it because of affection or something like that. And that's purely a literary device. That's different. That is, well, anyway. Then you have true natural gender, which we see in pronouns. But what's happening in here, what he's pointing out here, is we also use gender for grammatical categories. I don't know why. They chose gender as a way to organize things. So, if a word like anthropos, because it has this omicron right here, and the last letter is a sigma, it's in a grammatical category. It's in a masculine grammatical category. If we write out graphes, ends in an eta, this is now in a different grammatical category. Feminine also has a sigma ending. These are both nouns, correct? But their grammatical gender is different. Will they ever change genders? No, there is no transgendered grammar. That's funny. Now, they'll have a gender and they'll stay with it in their category. Okay? And there is a neuter category too. So that does not change. They will always be in the same gender that they originally were in. They don't change. But now, anthropos, okay, there the grammatical gender fits with the natural gender, doesn't it? Because what's the definition of anthropos? Man. Graphes means writing or scriptures, but does that have anything to do with natural gender?
No.
No. So it's purely an organizational thing. Alright, so that is something that will make more sense as we go along, but I just wanted to make a big deal out of it right now. Yes?
For like pronouns, would there be a change? Like, I guess obviously. Because I mean like...
The pronoun will be whatever the gender is of the noun that it's pointing to.
Yeah, like he or she.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's a man, then it'll always be a he. Right? So the pronoun will always be tied to whatever the head noun is. Alright? Okay, so I just wanted to compartmentalize natural gender and grammatical gender for you. One is what you would think it would be as far as gender, but the other is just a grammatical category. Alright, 5.7, declension. And then we'll take a break. In English, there are different ways to form the plural. For example, to form the plural of most words, you would add an S, like books. However, other words form their plurals by changing a vowel in the word. Man becomes men. So as children learn to speak, sometimes they might say this, right? In English. When they're 3 years old. That's a whole bunch of mans. No, but what we've learned is men. What happened? The vowel changed. What? When you were growing up, did anyone ever teach you why? No. You just learn that kind of in a cultural, social way that that's what happens. There's a reason for it. I don't know the reason why it goes from man to man.
No, but that would be inflection.
That would be inflection. Inflection could be adding S's like it sometimes, but here we don't add an S, we change the vowel. But it's still inflection, because inflection means what?
Change.
Change. Alright, now, let's finish this. Notice that it does not matter how a word forms its plural as far as the meaning is concerned. Children and childs. If the latter were a word, it would mean the same thing. Top of the page, 25. A declension is a pattern of inflection. You should highlight that. And a declension is a pattern of inflection. English does not really have declensions anymore, but it does have patterns. Words forming their plural by adding an S are one pattern. A sub-pattern would be adding ES. Another pattern is words that change their stem vowel, as goose to geese. Greek has 3 declension patterns. 3 basic patterns of inflection to indicate things like case and number. So, change is inflection, but when you look at the pattern of change, what do we call that?
Declension.
Okay? All I'm doing right now is building your grammatical vocabulary. That's it. You're not getting quizzed on, I'm not going to ask you, what's a declension? Or what's inflection mean? I'm not going to ask you that on a quiz. But when I'm talking and speaking, you need to know what these words mean. All right? So this is the background information. All right, let's take a break. Let's take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and keep pushing. Good, it's a degree.
Anybody who wants a cookbook, doesn't make cupcakes in the back there, right there with napkins. So,
there's more tactic learning. You can actually eat Greek cupcakes. Ability to be able to talk about this stuff. A noun. A word that stands for someone or something. Let's just go quickly. If you need to stop me, let me know. Adjective. A word that modifies a noun. Like big or black. Dark. Preposition. Is a word that shows a relationship between two other words. The Greek text was under the bed. Or is under the bed. Or temporal. The student always studies after the ball game. What's the prepositions there? Under, after. Right? So they're showing the relationship between the two other words, the student and the ball game, or the text and the bed. A word or a phrase following the preposition, the word following is the object of the preposition. What do we call the whole phrase? A prepositional phrase. So after the ball game, what's the preposition?
After.
What's the object of the preposition? Game. What's ball? There it's functioning as an adjective, right? So what's the prepositional phrase? After the ball game. So it's the whole thing. Okay, subject and predicate. A sentence can be broken into two parts. Subject describes the subject of the verb and what modifies it, like the big ball. The predicate describes everything else, the verb and the direct object. So, you will have the subject and the predicate is everything else, subject and the predicate. Usually associate the word predicate with verb, but it's the verb and everything that follows. Definite article, 5.12. In English, the definite article is the word the. The student is going to pass. This is one particular student. Indefinite article in English is a. A good student works every day on her Greek. It's indefinite because it could apply to anybody, right? All right. What happens in English if you have a word that begins with a vowel? What happens to the indefinite article?
If it's A, it goes to an.
It goes to an. Right, that's that last bit there. Okay, Greek subjects and verbs. 5.14. The formal study of verbs has been deferred until chapter 15 for now. You're going to concentrate on nouns and learn them well. However, there's an important grammatical note you need to learn in order to make sense of the homework. The ending of the Greek verbs indicate person and number. So, I and we are considered first person. You is considered second person. And everything else, like he, she, and it, are third. So, every verb, let me put this into major concept here for you. Okay, every verb contains in Greek. Every Greek verb contains, ready? Pronoun. It is built into the verb. So, if you in English have a verb like, I'll just use this one, to loose something. That's a verb, right? But what do you need to know who's doing that? You need a subject. Could be a noun or a pronoun, correct? So if I put I loose, is that first, second, or third person? First person. What would be second person?
You.
You. You loose. What would be third person?
He,
she, or it. He loses. Oh, I just inflected, right? Inflection, I just changed it. Because grammatically it requires it. What if I wanted to change the number? What would be first person but plural? We. We lose. Alright? Okay, but that's not the point. In English, we have the verb loose. In Greek verbs, every Greek verb contains one of those pronouns. It's built into it. So, taking away the English, I'm going to go to Greek. If I have the Greek word luo. That means not loose, it means I loose. Okay? So, whenever you see a Greek word, it will have I or we, or he, or she, or it, they, will be built into the word. That means you don't write out the pronoun and the verb, because the verb already contains the pronoun. This is just laying some pre-verb work on you right now. This is not a quizzable or a testing bit of material I'm giving you. This is just laying out some verb stuff. Every Greek word contains the pronoun already. We don't have to add another pronoun. So the verb to be is me, I am. It's not just am, because every Greek word contains a pronoun. It's I am. But what did we learn today? What was one of our vocab words?
Ego.
We had a pronoun, didn't we? It was ego. So in the Greek, it's ego me. So why would we have two pronouns if we're literally translating it? Why would they do that?
There's some theological point being conveyed.
In this case, yes. But there's a lot of times when it's not theological like that.
It stresses the emphasis on the I.
Yes. For emphasis. They're trying to draw attention to it. Jesus said, you have heard it said, but I myself say unto you. So in other words, he's doubling up the pronouns. That's just something that happens in the language. They don't always double it up, because every verb contains a pronoun. But if they add it in there, then it's emphatic. All right? Every verb contains a what?
Pronoun.
A pronoun. Look at the dots. Graph face. The ending on there, the ace ending. Is that a diphthong?
Yes.
I heard one answer.
Yes.
Is this a diphthong right here?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it is. It's a diphthong. Graphase tells you the subject is you, second person. So this ending right here on a verb tells us the person and the number of the verb. This right here, we get the meaning of the verb, which is just like our noun, right? Didn't we just learn a noun? What noun did we learn that's like that?
Graphe.
Graphe, right? Means writing or scripture. Here we're going to see that this same root is also used for a verb, but because of this ending, we know what pronoun, person, and number. In this case, second person, you. Right. Now, this is where the mushy fog comes in a little bit, because we're mixing Greek and verbs and nouns and stuff. Not every root is going to go between a verb and a noun like that. Graphe just happens to. All Dr. Mounce is trying to get us to know right now is that verbs contain pronouns, person and number. Okay. So, the A ending in graphe tells you it's he, she, or it. Okay, so I erased that. I shouldn't have done that. So, graphe. What changed? What inflected? The ending inflected? That now tells us the difference between the person and the number and the pronoun that's embedded into the word itself. So the first one is you write, the next one is he, she, or it writes. Okay? So that's just showing how verbs work. Yes?
So we would get the gender role from the subject?
Okay. Are you talking about natural or grammatical gender?
Grammatical.
Okay. Grammatical gender is just a category. But a word, a noun, will only have one gender. It never changes.
Okay.
This will always be a feminine noun. I mean verb. Noun.
Now, what about the natural?
We're going between nouns and verbs. What?
Now, what about the natural? How would that happen? Would
it natural be? Gender usually is only in pronouns, like he and she and it, or in a noun that carries its own natural gender, like girl, man, okay. Something like that. But we don't really... All we're worried about is the grammar. We're not really worried about the actual natural gender yet. Okay, he's telling you this kind of stuff for a reason. This is just a little bit about verbs so that we can bridge with our nouns a little bit. 5:15. An important consequence of this is that a Greek sentence does not have to have an expressed subject. Did everyone get that sentence? You should highlight that. An important consequence of this is that a Greek sentence does not have to have an expressed subject. The subject can be contained in the verb. Why? Because all Greek verbs contain pronouns. And the pronoun could be the subject. So, sou graphes and graphes both mean you write. See that? Here is sou graphes. This is a pronoun in Greek. And here's your verb. Versus here's just the verb. But you don't technically have to have that pronoun up there. Because all Greek verbs contain the pronoun built into it. So, you write is you write. Really, if we saw this in Greek, we would say, you yourself are writing it. To designate that person, to emphasize it, it's emphatic. But technically, the pronoun verb and just the verb containing the pronoun mean the same thing. Okay. In the exercises, I will always include the pronoun in the translation of the verb. If there's an expressed subject, you would not use the pronoun. Okay, so what he's doing is he's laying this out for us to do our homework. So, if we saw this example right here in our homework, anthropos graphe ta biblion. What has he done with the graphe? He gives it to us because we're not learning verbs. So he's helping us. He's giving us the verb definition. So graphe means, in the third person singular, he, she, or it writes. Now, do we have a subject for this sentence? We have anthropos. The man writes the book. So even though the verb contains the pronoun, do we need it to translate? Do we need the pronoun?
No.
No, we don't need it because we already have anthropos. We already have anthropos. But he's just showing us from the dictionary kind of sense what that verb means. He, she, or it writes. Anthropos, but it's really the man or a man writes the book. So in a sentence, you wouldn't translate it, a man, he writes the book, right? That wouldn't make sense. You'd simply say a man writes the book. However, if the subject were not expressed, if we didn't have the anthropos in there, could we then use that pronoun? Yes. Because every verb contains a pronoun. So if anthropos was not there and it just said graphe ta biblion, then what would the subject be? He, she, or it writes the book. Does everybody understand that? This is just so we know how to do our homework. Yes.
So for the verb, since he already has a subject, does he have to inflect the verb?
The verb is changed to match the subject.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. This is a litmus test to know that you've got the right subject. Okay, so if we have graphe, We know that grape is third person. I mean, we know. I do. You haven't learned that yet. So, anthropos means man. For you English grammarians, is man first, second, or third person?
Third person.
First person would be like an I, right? Or a you. No. A noun is always in the third person. So because this ending and the verb is third person, he, she, or it, because every verb contains a pronoun, and this is a third person ending, does it match a third person noun?
Yes,
it does. So all that means is that these two words are safe to go together. They match. Because the third person pronoun that's built into here matches a third person noun. Okay? That's not, you're not going to have to explain that to me. Okay? It's just so you know that there's matching going on here. This seems really like a long discussion about something that's very technical. The whole reason we have to have this discussion is because we're trying to skip verbs. Okay? I'm having to explain all of this to you right now in a super fast way so that we don't have to worry about them anymore till almost next semester. So this is just a little bit to know how verbs work so that we can, when you look at your homework, it makes somewhat sense to you. Okay? All right. One more point, just to confuse us some more. Graphe can mean he writes, she writes, or it writes. Why? Because every verb contains pronouns, and graphe is the third person ending. The A ending is used with all three genders. Only context will help you decide which gender is correct. I will always translate verbs in the exercises up to chapter 15 with all three pronouns. It's up to you to decide which is more appropriate, which is the more appropriate translation based on context. Okay, here's another example. Ha, theos, agapa, ton, cosmon. So the verb, he's giving us the verb in parentheses, right? Because we don't have to know verbs. Agapa, he, she, or it loves. You've heard people say agape, right? Agape means love. Here's the verbal form, agapa. He, she, or it loves. That's the third person. So the pronoun is built into the verb. But do we have a subject here? Yes, we do. What's the subject? Theos. So do we need that pronoun in our translation?
No.
We don't need to say God, he loves the world. No, just God loves the world. Now, is God, the word theos, is that a first, second, or third person? It's a regular noun. It's a noun, so it's third person. Does it match the pronoun inside of the verb?
Yes.
Does it match? Yes. Does the noun match the pronoun in the verb? Yes. It's third person, and that particular form of that verb is also has the third person pronoun in it. They match. They go together. That's how you know that that subject and that verb go together. They match each other. Okay. When we come to verbs later, halfway through the book, we go over all this stuff later. All I want you to know is that he's giving you the translation to the verbs. That's all. Okay? All right. Now, with that, we can actually move on to chapter 6. Now, we are actually starting Greek grammar right now. This is the moment when it's happening. Everything up to this point has just been preliminary groundwork. Okay? Yeah. This is the deal now.
That's right.
Get ready. In this chapter, we'll learn how to identify whether a noun is first or second declension. What does declension mean? A pattern of change. Yes, very good. We also learn two cases and their endings. What does case show us? This would be if you. Oh, that's good. Yes. The cases tell us function. Everybody say function. Function. Yeah. Hey, which ones are we going to learn? We're going to learn two of them. Nominative, that's when it's functioning as the subject. And we're going to learn the accusative case, that's when it's functioning as the object. So this chapter is all about subjects and objects. Real basic. All right? We're also going to learn the forms of the word the and how they agree with the noun they are modifying. So, if you have the, in English we just have, does this ever inflect? No. Does or the or that? No, it doesn't change, does it? It doesn't inflect. In Greek, the definite article will inflect. But, it will always match. It will agree with the noun that it is modifying, which is good, because it'll be a clue to you. The article is your friend. I'm just saying that now, like it's your friend. You'll be able to figure out so much stuff by the article. All right, two hints for effective translation, and the first three of eight noun rules. In the old days of Greek, we had to memorize all these lists of inflection. All of these long declension lists. We would just have to memorize them. There's a video that I like that I might have showed in the class if you had me last semester in the King James Bible. Did I show that? Anyone have me last semester where I showed that video? And it was a biopic drama documentary on King James. And there's this really awesome scene because it kind of makes me remember Greek in the old days when I took Greek, where James, as a young boy, is being tutored and he's learning his Latin. And as he's learning his Latin, the tutor is whipping him with a leather belt. So every time he goes through an inflection, like anthropos, whoosh, anthropa, whoosh, anthrope, like that. And they used to do that back then.
We got them wrong?
No, because it would heighten the awareness, the senses, that you would remember the inflection.
What?
Yeah.
So if you got something wrong, you got right.
Now, they did not do that when I learned Greek. But we still had to just sit there and memorize the patterns of change and the inflection patterns like that. That is not what we're going to do. We are going to learn eight rules, and then we are going to learn one chart. And with those in hand, you'll be able to figure out everything. It's awesome. Okay? By far the longest chapter in this book is this one. You're meeting some important ideas for the first time. Wants to cover them adequately, he says. Here's how each chapter is laid out. Starts with an exegetical insight. So you get a devotional at the beginning of every chapter, an overview, a discussion of English grammar, then he covers the Greek, then he summarizes it, you get vocabulary, and then sometimes there's advanced information, which if you're daring, you can read that. And And then sometimes the chapters are so long he has a halftime review. Okay? 6.2. Here's the English part. Everything you didn't know about English grammar in this chapter we just covered in 5. Alright, so we skip that. Greek. Here we go. Do not memorize the endings in the following illustrations. All he wants you to do is see how inflection works. What does inflection mean?
Change.
Change. Okay. Case ending. A case of a word in Greek is indicated by the case ending. This is a suffix that's added to the end of a word. So, the basic word for apostle is apostola. Everyone see that? Right there. Apostola. If the word is functioning as the subject, it takes a case ending that is equivalent to the subject case ending in English. S. If it is functioning as the direct object, it takes the case ending that is equivalent to the objective case in English. So, in English here, the subject and the object don't inflect, do they? Right? Does everyone see that? It's apostle. In English, we don't inflect that word. But how are they functioning? This is functioning as a subject, and this is functioning as the object. How do we know that in Greek?
The ending.
The ending. So, ha apostolos, pempe, that's the verb to send, ton apostolon. What's the difference between the two? One has a sigma and one has a nu at the end. But the word itself is still apostola. It just, if it's the subject, it's apostolos. If it's the object, it's apostolon. See why Greek is easier than English? If you were coming from Korea and you saw, so the apostle sends the apostle, how would you know which one is the subject and which one is the object? They don't change. Huh?
Placement in the sentence.
You'd have to learn about English and placement and closeness to the verb, right? Whoa. That is really kind of like open-ended, you know? But in Greek, it's very clear. Apostolos, subject, and apostolon. You could actually, in the word order, flip the word order. And that wouldn't make a difference. Because as soon as you saw the case ending, you would know what the subject was. Word order is irrelevant. Up here it's nice, it's in order right now, subject, verb, object. But the ending is what's important. Okay. 6.4, stem. If you take the case ending off of a noun, you are left with the what? Stem. You should highlight that. The stem of logos is what? Laga. It's laga. It's the stem of the noun that carries the what? The meaning. The meaning. What carries the meaning?
The stem.
Yes. The stem. What does the ending tell you?
Function.
Yes. That is right. The ending tells you the function. The stem tells you the meaning. It's essential that you be able to identify the stem of a word. Here is an important thing to highlight. It is listed in the vocabulary section with an asterisk. Does everybody see that? So when we go to the vocab section of our book, and we get a vocabulary word, and it gives us the definition, then he'll put this in parentheses with an asterisk like that. That's showing you the stem. Just the stem. There's no ending on that, is there? It's not logos. Log on, right? No, we're not doing that. That's just the stem. You're going to remember that just from the whipping thing.
Will we ever use a stem in a sentence? Or
no, it always will have an ending. Yes. the dictionary meaning comes from the stem. But it has to function somehow. And to function, we've got to have an ending on it. Okay, gender. A noun carries... A noun either has masculine, feminine, or neuter gender. A noun has only one gender. It never varies. Footnote, there are a few words that are both masculine and feminine. So he just contradicted himself there. But you will not meet them for some time. So, in the whole scope of it, really, 99% of the time, all you have to worry about is each noun will retain and keep one gender. It does not change. And that is grammatical gender. That's a category. It's not a natural gender. Number. Instead of adding an S to the word like in English, Greek indicates singular or plural by its different case endings. So, apostolos, right, is a subject for apostle. Apostolon is the object. But what if we wanted, if we made this a singular, what if we wanted plural? What do we do? Do we change this ending and add something to it? No, we don't. We just keep the stem and then we put the right ending. The iota, apostoloi. So now, with the changing of one letter, we now know it's plural singular, apostoloi. So apostolos, apostolon, I want to go to the plural, apostoloi, apostles. Well, remember what he said at the beginning of this section? Don't try to learn these endings right now. That's not what we're doing. Even though that's what you're all writing down. Okay. Declensions. As discussed in 5.7, there are different inflection patterns. Those are called declensions. The pattern a word follows does not affect its meaning, only its form. Children and child would mean the same thing if it was actually a word. Okay, in Greek, there are basically three inflection patterns. Therefore, there are three what? Declensions. Yes, declensions. What declension a particular noun follows has no bearing on the word. That doesn't matter. That's just the list that it belongs to, the declension list. What declension a particular noun follows has no bearing on the meaning of the word. The different declensions affect only the form of the case ending. So, words will decline or change a specific way. And that's it. There's only one way it will go. It'll either be the first way, the second way, or the third way. That's it. So it won't hop over and follow the other pattern. Graphe will decline or change and flex the same way every time. Anthropos will follow the second declension pattern every time. It doesn't change. You are learning a language and its bits and pieces and parts and what it would take to use a language at a much more accelerated rate than you would at like English because it is so simplistic. It just follows a pattern and it sticks with that pattern and that's it. If you know the stem and you know the pattern, you're done. You can figure out, you can play Sherlock Holmes from then on. You can just figure everything out. Okay? All right. Okay, nouns have a stem ending. This is where we start learning a little bit of how the rules work. Nouns have a stem ending in alpha or eta are of the first declension. All right. So the first declension pattern the stem will end in what?
Alpha or eta.
Alpha or eta. What's a word that you've learned already that ends in an ative?
Graphe.
Anyone second that?
Yes.
Graphe. Graphe ends in an ative. So what pattern of change is it going to follow?
First.
The first declension pattern. We don't know the patterns yet. We're dealing with concepts right now. Okay, look at the second bullet. Yes. The part's coming. Okay, nouns that have a stem ending in an omicron are in the second declension. Second declension stem words end in what? Omicron. What's an example of that? Lo, what? Law, not lo. La, ga. That's the end of the stem. What is this? It's a sigma, but what do we call that part of this word?
The lexical form.
This is the stem, and this is the what?
The ending.
The ending, yes. And someone was even more specific. They said the case ending. Yes, that's very good. Whoever said that. This is the stem. So when we're talking about declensions, are we talking about case endings? No, we are not. We are talking about how the stems end. Laga. If a stem ends in an omicron, it follows this pattern. If a stem ends in either an alpha or an eta, it follows this pattern.
I have a question.
Yes.
Maybe is that a place right now?
No, it's fine.
How do we know when we're looking at a word what the stem is? Like, how do we know if we're looking at the stem or...
There's two ways to know.
Okay.
When you get your vocabulary list, he will put in... That's like not that. It's the right anything right there. That's me thinking about two things at the same time. Okay. He said he would do this, and then he would do this.
Oh.
What does that mean? He's showing you the stem of the word. That's going to come after. Over here, he's going to put logos, comma, u, comma, ha. That's your full entry for your vocab, right? What is this right here?
The lexical form.
That's your lexical form. What's this part right here? That's another case ending that is showing you as a reference, which we haven't learned about yet. And then what's this part?
The
definite article for that word. Okay? That's these three parts. So, this is the whole thing. Then you'll have this after the definition, just as a reference point. So, you start to pick it out. But as you get better at your Greek, when you see words, nouns, when you see nouns, you'll be able to pick out the case ending and the stem vowel. You'll see that. They'll stand out to you. Yes?
The first declension is the first bullet point.
Yes.
It's a rule. Okay, so...
Yeah. But we'll see the rules in a much cleaner way here in a second.
Okay.
All right? Well, third bullet point. If the stem of a word ends in a consonant, it's the third declension. So some of the words, the stem itself will end in a consonant. So far we have eta and alpha, and we have an omicron. The third declension will end in a consonant. We don't talk about these until the 10th chapter. Okay, so that's good. Alright, here we go. For example, first declension case ending for the subject of the verb is nothing. Okay. The stem stands by itself. So what he's doing right here is hey hora, the hour. Which letter does hora end in?
An alpha.
So what declension does it belong to? First declension. Second declension case ending for the subject of the verb is sigma apostolos. So ha apostolos lege ton logon. Both logon and apostolos The stem ends in what?
Omicron.
So they're second declension. The declension is just telling us which endings to use. That's it. Which pattern of endings. That's all we're learning right now, is what pattern are they going to follow? Are we learning anything about meaning? Are we learning anything about meaning?
No,
because where does meaning come from?
Stem.
It comes from a stem. It doesn't come from the endings. The endings are only going to tell us, what is the ending? What does the case ending tell us?
Function.
Subject, object, that kind of thing. Yes?
So, for log on, how would you know if that's plural? Would you add an iota to that for since it's objective?
We'll see that ending in a second. Okay. But no, you don't, that's not how you do it. It has its own ending.
Okay.
So you can't confuse it. So, sigma, nu, iota, and then we'll see the next one. Yeah?
Oh, none of the words end in any of the other vowels?
The end in alpha, eta, omicron, or the end in third declensions end in a consonant.
Okay.
That's it?
Okay.
It's really, go like this. That's it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Indeclinable. Some words in Greek are indeclinable, such as personal names and words borrowed from other languages. What does that mean that they're indeclinable?
They don't change.
Yeah, they don't change. Right? Like, Abraham doesn't change. Their form, therefore, does not change regardless of their function. Oh, Sarah Yardley likes your cupcakes. I just saw a Twitter thing came up. Sorry. Israel doesn't change. It's always going to be written as Israel. It doesn't inflect like that. So that's just some words are like that. All right. Now, we need to learn about the first two cases. Case tells us what?
Function.
Everyone say function.
Function.
Case tells us function. We need to learn about the first two cases. Nominative. In this chapter, you'll learn two of the five Greek cases. The first is nominative. The nominative case, highlight this, the primary function of the nominative case is to indicate the subject. Look at that in your book and highlight that under 6.8. Primary function of the nominative case is to indicate the subject of the sentence. So what kind of case ending will the subject have? What kind?
Sigma?
It'll have the nominative case ending. I'm just getting used to saying the right words. It'll have the nominative case ending. Okay. Where am I? Accusative. If a word is the direct object of the verb, it will be in the accusative case. This means it will have an accusative case ending. So if you have an ending that's in the accusative case, how is it functioning? As the object.
Direct object.
It's the direct object. One of the accusative case endings is nu. We've already seen that. Look at this tricky sentence right here. Christon agapahatheos. Just from the little bit that you've learned so far, what is the subject?
Theos.
Why?
Because
where is the nominative case ending?
On theos,
sigma. That's the nominative case ending. Therefore, you know it's functioning as the subject. Christon has what kind of case ending? Accusative, therefore it's functioning how?
As
the direct object. So how do we translate this? What's the subject in English?
God loves
Christ. God is the subject, Christ is the object. Christ is receiving God's love. So in Greek, the word order doesn't matter. It's the case ending that tells you how it's functioning.
Now,
For the article that's on that sentence, do we...
this right here?
Yeah. The ha. Do we trans...
Usually you do.
Okay.
Because the definite article would be like, the God loves Christ.
Yeah.
But guess what? There's only one God.
Yeah.
So we don't have to say the one as opposed to the others. God.
Okay.
Yes.
So, like, God is the subject and Christ is the object. So, could you have an article for both?
You could.
So, would they be, like, directly in front of it? Or is there a way to, like, differentiate?
Usually they'll be right in front of it.
Okay.
Yeah. But
so that,
but more important than placement is how they match as far as the endings, the stem endings. Okay, so we'll get to that though. Okay, word order. Notice in the example above that you do not determine whether a word is the subject or the object by its order in the sentence, right? The only way to determine the subject or direct object of the Greek verb is by the case endings. Highlight that in your book. It's already italicized, but highlight it anyway. This cannot be stressed too much. Because the natural inclination will be to ignore the case endings and assume that the word before the verb is the subject and the word after is the direct object. Fight this tendency, it says. In Greek, the ending sigma shows you that the word is in the nominative case and is therefore the subject. Look down here, just to make it fun. Theos agapaton kosmon. Agapaton kosmon theos. Ton kosmon theos agapa. Agapa theos ton kosmon. That all means exactly the same thing. See? Just let go of all of those preconceived notions. This is not English. This is Greek. Do you see the sigma on theos all the way down? Right? Theos. That's the subject in every one of those examples.
So, in the sentence, so, yeah, so, it doesn't matter.
Okay, look at the last one. Agapa, theos, ton, kosmon. Here you've gone verb, subject, object. Here you, object, subject, verb. Verb, object, subject. Doesn't matter. Yes. We're not learning how to write Greek. We're not. We're not having to translate from English into Greek. Isn't that great?
Eventually, yes. Like, to get to that point, though, would they all be correct in writing?
If you could go back in time, 2,000 years, and you wanted to write Greek, you would need to learn the proper way to do that. Yeah.
So we can text each other.
No, there is a lot of different ways. Sometimes the word order is determined by what he's trying to emphasize. So he'll put the verb right at the front because he wants you to be exhorted on something. And so he's strengthening the exhortation because the verb is up there. And then he goes on to the now, to the subject and the object. Right? So there's not as much as far as rules in that. But all we have to do is recognize what the subject and the object is here. Okay. Yes.
So the word order matters on what he's trying to emphasize then?
It could. But right now, all we have to do is learn about declension, case ending, and this right here. And then we'll have a break. Lexicons and lexical form. Whereas most people call them dictionaries, scholars call them lexicons. The form of the word found in the lexicon is called the lexical form. So if you wanted to look a particular Greek word up in the dictionary, which we call a lexicon, what are you looking for? You're looking for its lexical form or its dictionary form. The lexical form of a Greek noun is its form in the nominative singular. For example, the lexical form of cosmon, what ending is on cosmon? What ending is that? That's the new, right? It's new. That's accusative. That means it would be functioning as the object, right? But what is the actual lexical form? It's cosmos, which is the nominative singular form. That's just so you know. Every time you go to look up a word in the dictionary, it'll be nominative singular. Always. It won't be an inflected form. The dictionary is very consistent. Nominative singular forms for nouns.
Why don't they use the stem to find the lexical?
Because sometimes, depending upon the declension, when you attach the endings, something can happen to the stem. Not in what we're learning at this point.
Gotcha.
That's why third declension is in chapter 10. Okay? So what we're learning right now in first and second declension, their patterns are very regular. Third declension, it's a little bit different. Yes? Okay. All right.
That's the way I think.
Your vocabulary words are given in lexical form. So whenever you're asked to explain the form of an inflected Greek word, you must be able to indicate its lexical form. Otherwise, you're not be able to look up the word in the lexicon to find its meaning. So, if you saw an accusative form of a word, like log on, and I said to you, what word is that from? You would say, logos. Because that's the dictionary or the lexical form of that word. Logoi. What word is that from?
Logos.
That's from logos. So, the lexical form is always the nominative singular form. Anyone understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's just so you can work with the dictionary a little bit. All right. Let's take 5 minutes. We're almost through. No, I'm going to be the case.
Would you say 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
In those similar yet different systems, the agapa has an irregular diphthong. Does that play into the pronoun being included
in this matrix?
Okay. All right, here we go. Halftime review. You're halfway through this lesson. Remember, this is the biggest chapter in the book. Isn't that amazing? Okay, so let's stop and review what you've learned. Greek uses different case endings to indicate case. What does case tell us?
Function.
Subject or object, right? Mm-hmm. The stem of a word is the basic form of the word that carries the meaning. How do we know the stem? We take away the case ending. Stems ending in alpha, eta are in the first declension. Stems ending in omicron are in the second, right? Okay. If a word is the subject of a verb, it is in the nominative case, uses nominative case endings. If a word is the direct object of a verb, it is in the accusative case, and uses accusative case endings. Word order does not determine the function of the word. Word order is irrelevant, right?
Right.
Right? Okay. The lexical form of a noun is the nominative singular. So you look it up in the dictionary, you are going to see the nominative singular form. Okay, 6.12, case endings. The following chart is what we call a paradigm. Let's let that word sink in. It's a paradigm. Paradigm, it is the paradigm of the case endings used by the first and second declensions. Nominative and accusative. If there's a dash there, it means that no case ending is used and the stem stands by itself. You've already had a word that does that. What is it? Graphe.
Graphe.
Is there any ending on graphe? No. It's the eta, and then there's nothing. That's what that dash means right there in that chart. A dash means no case ending is used and the stands by itself. An underlining alpha, this right here, which correlates to right here, means that the case ending joins with the final stem vowel. They came together and became one flush. All right. It's a little theological humor there. They became one flush. Okay. These endings must be learned perfectly. This is a chart that you have to learn. So, the chart will go like this. 2, 1, 2.
What do those mean?
That's what we're going to talk about. Only with the information that you have learned so far, what is your guess that what those mean?
Declension.
So, second declension pattern, first declension pattern, second declension pattern. That's the first part of the chart up here. 2, 1, 2. Then under that, you have the grammatical gender. Masculine, feminine, neuter. Okay? That has nothing to do with natural gender. It only has to do with the grammatical gender. Then down on this side, we have the case ending. Nominative, accusative at this point. With what?
Singular.
Singular and plural. Oops. No, sorry.
Singular.
Then we come down here, nominative again, plural, and accusative, plural. So, I will post on Populi a blank chart that looks like this. It'll be typed up. It'll be nice. It'll be blank. So what you have to practice, you can print it out, or you could just write it out yourself. You will have to practice writing in this chart for your quiz. Okay? Let's read this chart. We read the chart left to right, not down. Okay? So it goes, sigma nothing new. Say that with me. Sigma nothing new. So for the nominative singular endings, we go sigma like anthropos, nothing like graphe, because there's no ending on graphe, to the neuter ending is new. So that would be a word like ergon. We haven't really talked about the neuter yet. But it ends in a new. Then the next row, we'd go to the next row left to right. New, new, new. Say that with me. New, new, new. That's easy, right? It's just new, new, new all the way across. Not that much to learn. Then you'd go down to the nominative plural. Yoda, yoda, alpha. Say that with me. Yoda, yoda, alpha. Okay, so you have two yodas and then an alpha. So the masculine and the feminine, both are the same. And then the neuter is alpha. Then the accusative plural. This is the unique one right here, which means it's easy to remember because it's so special. Is us. Upsilon sigma. So upsilon sigma, say us sigma alpha. Say it again. Us sigma alpha. So, you basically could take any noun with the stem part of the noun and match it with one of these endings. If it's a first and second declension noun, you could take that stem, laga. Laga is a masculine second declension noun. Lagas, lagan, lagoi, lagus. But that's going this way. right? Because will logos ever change its gender?
No.
No. Will it ever change its declension pattern?
No.
It will always be second declension masculine. Yes.
You went over neuter, neuter gender. What words would be neuter gender and why?
Because they follow that pattern. So when you inflect or they do change based upon other functioning, subject or object, they will follow this grammatical category here. They will decline that way. They will not decline this way. So all we're doing is we're recognizing which pattern that they follow. That's it. All right, let's go on. When you attach the stem vowels, it looks like this next chart. We're not memorizing this. This is just showing you what it looks like. So if you took laga, right? What's the nominative singular ending for that? Sigma, right? Okay. But let's leave the final stem vowel on there. That's all he's doing in this chart. He's showing us os. Okay? So os, on, oi, us. And then the neuter, on, ah, ah. So in the feminine, stems can end in either eta or alpha, right? So the first one, if it ends in an eta, it's a, ain, I, os, or a, on, I, os. In the plural, first declension feminine words will always end in alpha, like that. So they always just go to that. This is, right now, this is just for structure. We're not learning that chart. Structure of the paradigms. The singular forms are on the top, the plural is on the bottom. The order left to right is masculine, feminine, neuter. It's a 2-1-2 pattern. Remember, we're reading it this way. We're going like this. Sigma, nothing, new. Like that, right? New, new, new. Yoda, yoda. Alpha, us, sigma, alpha. The neuters are easy. Because it's new, new, and alpha. Okay. We have to learn these endings. If you don't learn the endings, you can't translate anything. Memorize the endings by themselves. Wait, let's just read these bullets. Key to learning this paradigm is to realize that translation does not require you to repeat paradigms, it requires you to recognize them. So, if you take this chart, you have your chart, and you know what the stem means, then you can figure out what the word means. Okay? Instead of learning each word in a full list. This is like having your cheat code right here. Learn the endings. So when you have a sentence with this chart, you'll be able to figure out every subject and every object in the sentence. It's like a shortcut. Okay. He suggests you read them left to right. I said that. Use flashcards, but each ending on a different card. You can do that if you like. I'm not requiring that. Always say the endings out loud, but say it together again. Left to right. Ready, everyone? Sigma, nothing new. New, new, new. Yoda, yoda, alpha. Us, sigma, alpha. All right. Hint. Masculine and feminine case endings are often similar or even identical sometimes. And the nominative and accusative of the neuter is usually distinct from the masculine. In the neuter, the nominative and accusative singular are always the same. The nominative accusative plural are always the same. All right. So, 6:14. Remember, this is the longest chapter in the book. Only my son is allowed to sigh in class. You don't do that to your other teachers, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right.
They give you coffee.
Okay, paradigm of the word and case endings. Now let's add the case endings to the nouns and differentiate between the stem and the case ending. You don't have to recreate this for me. This is just showing you, if you put the endings with the stems, what it would look like on the same chart. You still have... a little bit bigger. You still have sigma, nothing, new. New, new, new. Yoda, yoda, alpha. Us, sigma, alpha. Same thing. But this is just showing you with the stems on there what they look like. What's the function of the nominative case?
Subject.
What's the function of the accusative case? Direct object. Okay? That's the whole point of this chapter, by the way. It's knowing what the subject and the direct object is. That's it. Yes?
Why is ergon do this?
Ergon?
Ergon.
Because it follows the second declension neuter pattern.
All right, so the second declension has two different categories, masculine and neuter.
Has two different grammatical gender categories. It follows. Yes. Will ergon ever follow the masculine second declension pattern?
No.
No. Ergon will always follow the second declension neuter pattern. Yes.
And then, so are there just going to be a list of words that we just have to know they follow the neuter, or is there like a rule to know?
When we come to the vocabulary and we look at its lexical form, we will now know which pattern to put it in.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
Considering that the neuter and the masculine both end in omicron?
They're stems.
The stems end.
Yep.
Is there a...
They both end in what?
Omicron.
Because they're second declension.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
How can we know which is neuter or which is masculine?
Because when you learn the dictionary form, which is the lexical form, that's when you'll learn that. And the article. Because the article is your friend. The article is your best friend.
I don't know the article.
You don't know the article yet. But he will be your best. He'll be your best friend. Okay. Okay. Now, 615, feminine. In the paradigm, there are two feminine nouns, right? You guys see that? Okay. There's two feminine nouns, graphe and hora. The only difference between these forms of these two words is the final stem vowel. What's the final stem vowel in each?
Beta and alpha.
Is everybody's brain caught up with his? In the feminine paradigm, right here, there's two words. One's graphe and one's hora. What's the difference between them? One ends in an eta, the other one ends in an
alpha.
So they're both feminine first declension, right? Alpha and eta are related to each other. See, if you think of alpha and eta as being related vowels, like then that they're kind of like cousins or something, then that makes sense. You don't have to learn different patterns. They're related. What happens when you get to the plural? They both distill down to what? The alpha. In the plural, it's just one. It's only in the singular that you could have eta or alpha. Will graph A in the singular ever end in an alpha? No, it won't. In the plural, though, it goes shifts to alpha. Okay. Okay, that's good enough. Now, you got to get into what's called parsing. Parsing, how to parse. When your instructor asks you to parse, this is the favorite part of Greek, you get to specify five things about any word. You will parse its case, its number, its gender, its lexical form, and its inflected meaning. Do all of those terms make sense? They do? What does case mean? Function. Number, singular, plural. Gender, which pattern it's following, right? What's lexical form? The dictionary form, right? What's inflected meaning? Once it's changed, what does it mean? The inflected meaning. Does anyone not understand that? Oh, really? Everyone's got that. You don't understand it? What does inflected meaning mean?
Changed meaning.
Once it's been changed, what does it mean? That's what inflected meaning means.
So, like logos.
Well, let's do an example.
Do a stem, yeah.
Okay, here's an example. Logos. Logos. What's the ending on that? This ending right here. There's your ending, right? Mm-hmm. So the stem ends right there. Log off. So what does it mean?
Word.
It means word.
Yeah.
What does us tell us?
It's objective and plural.
It tells us it's functioning as the object, the direct object. But what number?
Plural.
Singular or plural?
Plural.
Plural. Right? So from this one word with this ending right here, can we describe these five parts?
Yes.
We look at the word and we say, parse that word. That's how the professor will talk. Parse logos for it, is what I'll say. And you'll say, it is accusative, plural, masculine, from logos, meaning words.
Number four.
We just did Greek grammar for real right there. That was the real deal.
Yeah.
We just parsed something.
That's great. Let's take a moment. Lexical form.
Okay, what?
No, wait. So number. So the lexical form would be logos.
Logos.
Logos. It's a stem. That's a stem.
No.
No.
Logos is the stem.
Okay. Dictionary.
Yes. Okay. You want to do it again?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right. That's exciting. Okay.
I want to parse.
Parse.
I want to see you parse.
Okay. Let's do.
I'm
parsing.
Oh, man. I'll parse my friend again.
Apostoloid. Okay. What's the first thing? Case.
So,
wait, where?
Let's go through the steps.
Where is your chart? Your chart is on page 32. Look at page 32. Page 32 is your chart, right? 6.12. So, what's the ending?
Yoda,
right? Okay, so that tells us... Oh, there's the chart right there in front of us. Okay, so we know from the stem ending, the vowel, that it's second declension, right? And masculine. So we know it can't be neuter because it would be alpha or nu over here. It doesn't match that, right? Okay, so the neuter is out. We know that it's second declension, but it's not neuter. We know it's not feminine, first declension. Why? Does this end in an eta or an alpha?
Yeah.
Negative.
No, it ends in an omicron. Oh. So this is out, right? So we're left with this column right here. It ends in a iota. That only leaves us this choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so as we're going to parse case, what case is it?
It's
nominative. Mm-hmm. What's the second one? Number. Is it single? It's plural. So this is a nominative, plural, masculine, lexical form, apostolos, inflected meaning, Apostles. You just did Greek for the second time, right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
When we do the inflected,
you guys are college students right now.
Okay, when we do the inflected meaning, it's on the original form. Since it's not just plural, it's apostles.
The inflected meaning, this is inflected, right? Means it's changed.
Okay, the changed meaning.
The changed meaning.
More than one apostle.
Apostles.
Okay. Right. Another word.
Another word?
This is actually helping a lot. It's helping me.
Good. All right, let's do. Oh, man. Let me look at your vocabulary from last time.
I think I got this.
Let's do.
Amen. No, that would be third.
Oh, come on, you're messing me up, dude.
Cosmos. Okay. What is the final stem vowel? What's the vowel at the end of the stem?
Oh,
Omicron. Omicron, right? So that means it's the second declension, right? Okay. Does it end in a neuter or a new or an alpha?
No.
So it's not neuter second declension. So we've also just eliminated this one. So we're still over here. Mm-hmm. What's our ending? Us. See, if you have this chart, you can figure everything out. And that's why we're going to learn this chart. So us ending. So this is what? Accusative, plural, masculine. What's a lexical form?
Cosmos.
Mean, what does this word inflected mean?
Universe.
World. Yeah. The world. The cosmos.
I say universe.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go where we have not gone yet. Okay. Let's get wild and crazy.
Oh, no. That kind of
concept. Grafos. Okay. What does the stem end in?
Alpha.
Everyone say?
Alpha.
Stem ends in alpha. Stems ending in alpha or eta or what declension?
First
declension. Okay. So do we have to worry about these two?
No.
No, we don't. Now, it ends in alpha, so it's going to be over here. What's the ending?
Sigma.
That's one choice right here. Okay, so let's parse graphos. Case?
Accusative.
Case is accusative. Number?
Plural.
Gender?
Feminine.
Lexical form?
Graphe.
Graphe. Inflected meaning?
Writing.
Plural.
Writings.
Scriptures. Writings. Okay. Done Greek like five times now. Okay. 6.17. Parsing neuter nouns. When parsing a neuter word that is either nominative or accusative, the suggestion is to list both. There's going to be times outside of context. In other words, you're just looking at a word. And it's not in a sentence. It's just by itself. If it has these endings here, how are you going to know if it's nominative or accusative? You may not. If it's in a sentence, then you'd be able to figure that out. But if it's by itself and it just has the new at the end, then you wouldn't know what it is. So, for example, ergon is nominative or accusative singular neuter from ergon, meaning work. Outside of a sentence, you can't really tell the difference. When you're translating a sentence and come across one of these forms, it's important to see that the word can be either the subject or the direct object. If you make an assumption that it's a subject when in fact it's a direct object, you may never be able to translate it. But if you're accustomed to parsing as nominative and accusative, you'd be less likely to make this mistake. So, that makes sense. It's new, alpha, alpha. But the context will help you determine that. At this point, you just put both. If you see it just by itself. All right?
So if we're parsing it, we would write nominative singular and accusative singular. What do you think?
Yeah, write both. All right, okay. All right. First three noun rules. I think you already know these. But here they are formally. Right? You already know this, but here they are formally. These are the first three of the famous. They're famous, the Dr. Mounts. The famous eight noun rules. Learn them exactly. Stems ending in alpha or eta are in the first declension. Stems ending in omicron are in the second. And consonantal stems are in the third. You already know that? Yes. Number two. Every neuter word has the same form in the nominative and accusative. You already know that?
Now I do.
Wait, but you already knew that, right? Every neuter word has the same form in the nominative and accusative.
Now I know it formally.
Now you know it formally, yes. Aragon could be the nominative and accusative. Three, almost all neuter words, I like when he says that, almost. Almost all neuter words end in alpha in the nominative and accusative plural. Right here. In the plural. We don't care about that right now. That chart, we're good. I know, it's tricky. But just go by faith. Just chart. I'm not even requiring you to put the little line under there to remind you that something can combine together to make that. All you have to do is just learn it like that. Okay? These are the formal noun rules. You have to learn these exactly, and I'm going to quiz you on these. So far in this chapter, what's quizzable?
The chart.
The chart. This chart. And three noun rules. That's it.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
That's our quiz?
Well, yeah. That's that. But in this chapter, all that we've learned in this chapter, all that you so far you're required to know for me on a quiz is that chart and these three noun rules, which you already know. Okay. Here we go to your best friend forever. BFF right here. Definite article. The definite article is the only article in Greek. There is no indefinite article. Great. Awesome, right? That means we don't have to learn an indefinite article chart or anything. There's only the definite article. For this reason, you can refer to the definite article simply as the article. Like the oracle, but the article. Okay. 6.20, agreement. This is important. This should be highlighted right here. The article agrees with the noun and modifies in case, number, and gender. Do you know what case is?
You know what?
Yeah. Case endings, right? Case ending. Number and gender. Plural or singular, you get that from the ending. Gender. You can figure all that out. The article must match all of that. For this reason, unlike nouns, the article can occur in any gender. In other words, if a noun is nominative, singular, masculine, like anthropos, the article that modifies it will be nominative, singular, masculine. Has to be.
It would be all of it.
Every article has to match the noun it's with. It's the law. The lexical form of the article is the nominative, singular, masculine. So if you're parsing an article like ting, we tau eta nu, okay, that's a feminine form of an article, what's its lexical form? The dictionary form. The dictionary form of the article is always...
article.
It's always right here. It says it right here. The lexical form of the article is the nominative singular masculine. Ha. Ha is always the lexical form for the article. So if you're trying to look it up in the dictionary for what the article is, it'll be listed under hop.
What if the word is...
Doesn't matter. The article is always, the lexical form is always hop. Okay. Let's see now. Form of the article 621. Here is the paradigm for the article. Compare the forms to the case endings. That's our chart over there. To see the similarities. The feminine follows the first declension, the masculine and neuter the second. So this is very interesting. These are the articles. These will be attached to nouns. But they will have to match the noun that they're with. So if I have apostolos, apostles, plural, accusative, which article has to go with it? It has to match it. It has to be tous apostolos. If I said apostoloi, but I wanted to say the apostles and the subject, which article would be with it? Oi. Oi. Excuse me. Hoi. Apostoloi. So the article will always match the noun it's with in case, number, and gender. Yes. Raise your hand.
Yeah, for the nominative plural for the masculine. Hoi. Would it be hoi?
Hoi. Hoi. That's a rough breather. Okay. Look at 622. The article begins with either a rough breathing or a towel. So if you have that chart in front of you, you got to turn the page though, so maybe you can't see it. Where's 622 in here? Yeah, that's kind of a bummer you can't see the chart. Let me put the chart up here. I'll put the chart up here. I'm going to read these rules. The article begins with either a rough breathing or a towel. When you have the characteristic vowel of that declension in the case in it, the only exception is the neuter singular. Over there. Top. Okay. The article does not care about the declension 212 of the word it is modifying. Hey will modify a feminine noun whether it is first or second declension. Okay, this makes the article consistent and easy to learn. Okay, so look at the chart now below that. The paradigm with the full thing. There you can see the article matched up with what a word from that same declension pattern would look like. Ha, lagos, ta, lagon, hoi, lagoi, tus, lagus. He, grafe, tain, grafain, hi, grafai, tas, grafas. He, hora, tain, horan, hi, horai, tas, horas. Ta ergon, ta ergon, ta erga, ta erga. Okay, so you can see the patterns there. Just notice that stems ending in eta or alpha are the first declension, right? But what about the article? Here, that's really easy to see, right? Tain, graphane. But what if the stem ends in an alpha? Did the article change? No, it stayed. Article does not change. Article is your buddy because it won't change on you. So tain graphane, and tain horan. So remember the eta and the alpha are related. That's why. They're related to each other. Okay, knowing the forms of the article is key to recognizing the forms of nouns in Greek. Sometimes with the nouns, they'll go through these different changes, right? You'll be like, okay, I think I see the stem and I see the ending, but I'm not sure. You can always rely on the article, because the article won't change. They won't. It'll keep to its pattern. It doesn't do different things. So the article is your buddy. Okay, if you learn the forms of the Greek article well, you will not have much more to learn for nouns. Wow, what a statement. Okay, almost all nouns are preceded by an article. So with the article in place, you can figure out quite a bit. If you can't figure out a noun, you look at the article and you can be able to figure out three things. What? Case, number, and gender. Right there, bam, just from the article. If you're struggling with what a particular noun is. The second reason why the article is important is that most of the case endings found on nouns are similar to the definite article. Therefore, if you know the article, you will know many of the case endings. All right? Okay, translation procedures. We need some procedures here. What time is it?
3:49.
Okay. When students start learning Greek, one of the initial problems is that the Greek sentence looks like a collection of unrelated words. One of the keys to this problem is learning to split a sentence into its parts. At this point, you can separate the subject and the direct object from the verb. Theos sose psukos. God will save souls. Do we have to worry about the verb part in our homework? No, we don't. All we're worried about is theos and psukos. The subject is theos and the direct object is psukos. You would divide the sentence like this. See the dashes he puts in there? Okay, that's just to help you see the parts. If there's an article, what do? We keep it with the noun that it goes with. This is just kind of a crutch or a bridge to help you see these different pieces. This is not how Greek is written or anything like that. This is just to break it up for you. As you get further into Greek and sentence structure becomes more complex, this practice becomes more significant. This is almost like charting it out, graphing it out. Okay, 6:26, article. As in English, the Greek article is translated the. The rule is to translate according to the presence or absence of the article. If an article is present, translate it. If there's no article, don't use it. If there is no article, you may insert an A before the noun if it better makes sense in English. For example, ha anthropos means the man. And anthropos, without the article, would just be man or a man. If it made more sense, you could put the A in there. Okay? 6:27. You'll soon discover that the Greeks do not use the article the same way we do. They use it when we never would, and they omit it when English demands it. Languages are not codes, and there is not an exact word-for-word correspondence. That's why we have all of our different translations, right? Therefore, you should be a little flexible at this point. As you work through the following chapters, you'll note some of the differences. You'll meet these two differences in this chapter. Okay, names. Greek often uses the definite article before a proper name. For example, you'll find ha Jesus, but do we say the Jesus? No. So you can just admit that article there, but the Greeks, they put it in there to make to the properness of it. Abstract nouns. Greek often uses the article with abstract nouns such as the truth. English does not normally use the article with abstract nouns, and you may omit it in translation when it's necessary. And you get a feel for that depending upon the context. Okay, this is important. 6:28, postpositive. A postpositive is a word that cannot be the first word in a Greek sentence. There are certain words that absolutely refuse to go first. You ever known a kid like that in school? Like they did not want to be first? Okay? These are certain words that are like that. They're postpositive. They will not go first. Postpositive is a word that cannot be the first word in a Greek sentence or clause, even though in your translation you would then put it first. But in Greek it won't be. It usually is the second word and sometimes the third. There are only a few of these postpositives. In this chapter, you will learn de, meaning but. So, ha de apen is translated, but he said. So, what part of speech is but?
The conjunction.
It's a conjunction, right? Like and, but. So this is a conjunction. And it's really finicky day. It doesn't want to go first. So look, it stuck itself between the article, this article, and this verbal form right here. Ha day. It moved over one. But when you translate it into English, you put it back first again. But, he said, because in English we put it first. So there are just a few post-positive words, and day is one of them. Okay, there's the summary. I'm not going to read all that. Vocabulary. This is your vocabulary for next week. Do you feel super exercised right now in your brain?
Yeah.
It's like going to the gym, except for your brain. Tomorrow morning you're going to wake up and you're going to be like, oh, I worked out yesterday. Okay. Agape. Everyone say agape.
Agape.
Agape. So, agape, ace, hey. We now know what all those parts mean for the most part. We know we have the lexical form is the nominative singular. You could look at agape and I could say to you, what declension does it follow? It ends in an eta.
First
declension, right? You could say that. You know that now. Ace is the alternate ending. That's the genitive. We learn that in a week. What's hey at the end of that?
The article.
That's the article. And what does it mean?
Love.
Love. Great. Love. All right. How many times in the Bible? New Testament. 116 times. What is that next part with that asterisk right there?
Lexical.
That, no, this, agape is the lexical. Asterisk tells you what?
Inflected.
No.
Stem.
Huh? That's a very similar word. Yes. Stem.
Oh, that's a stem?
Stem. That's the stem. Okay, now how come, wait, why on this word is the stem and the lexical form the same?
Because nominative singular doesn't have anything.
Oh! You guys better show up. There's the leader of your study group right there.
Yeah.
What's this right here? Dash. Means nothing, right? So the nominative singular ending for the first declension is nothing. That's why the stem and the lexical form look the same. Okay? Alas means an other or another. That's not a noun. Autas, aute, auta, that is a pronoun. Meaning he, she, or it. That's the third person pronoun right there. Why do you think he's throwing this in? Do you use pronouns a lot when we translate?
5,597 times.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right there. 5,597 times. So that's why he's giving it to us early. So we can deal with the third person pronoun, he, she, or it. All right, here's another noun, basileia. Basileia, hey. Is that feminine or masculine or neuter?
Feminine. First declension feminine?
Yes. How do we know that it's first declension feminine?
Because it has an alpha form.
It ends in a what?
Alpha or eta.
Alpha or eta. Isn't that the first noun rule?
Yes.
Ends in an alpha or eta are first declension. Okay. Day. We just learned about day. It's post-positive. It's a conjunction meaning but or and. N. Means in, on, or among. This is our first vocabulary form of what part of speech?
A preposition.
No. A preposition. Preposition. When do we learn prepositions? Remember the overview section at the beginning?
Chapter 9.
Why is he throwing this in our vocab right now?
He's a student. coming up.
Because he wants us, when we go to translate, there's so many times that we use this preposition meaning in. He needed to throw it in there for us. Okay, back to another noun. Ergon. Uta. Is that masculine, feminine, or neuter?
Neuter.
Article is your friend. Neuter.
Oh, no, neuter.
Neuter. Ergon. Okay. Kairos u ha. Kairos u ha. This means appointed time. Noon is an adverb meaning now. Sometimes it's used as a noun, it would mean the present. It's noon means now, present. Ha he ta, there's your article, right? Ha he ta. What's the lexical form of the article? It's ha all the time. Hati. Hati. That, since, or because. So we have another kind of conjunction that begins another kind of phrasing. Hati, a hati clause. We'll learn about that later. Ooh, this is interesting. Ooh, ook, ooks. This is a negating particle. So you could say, go to the store. But if in Greek you wanted to say, don't go to the store, you'd put ooh in there. So that whatever the verb is saying, ooh makes it the negative of that. Hora. Hora, we've seen that already in our paradigm, means hour. Okay. Flip over to page 40. What's the percentage of the New Testament we've learned?
36.
Almost 37% of the New Testament. I think Altas brought us way up, right? 5,500 times. All right, here's what I'm going to do. We have to go. We didn't get a chance to go into the homework. So for next week, we would be in exercise 6. Okay? You can take a look at it. You can try it. There'll be a parsing section and a translation section. All right, try it out. Try doing some parsing. I don't have time to explain it to you. We're out of time. Look at the translation assignment. You could probably do almost all of it now all by yourself. But I'm not going to require it due at the beginning of class like it says on the syllabus. Because I wanted to do some of it with you and we didn't get to. Okay, so you're welcome.
Thank you.
You guys aren't excited enough.
So
take a gander at it. You know, look at it. Try some parsing. Try some translation. We'll introduce it and we'll go through it in class next time. Here's what is due. Your vocabulary that we just went over. Make flashcards for those words. The alphabet with the vowels. Make sure you know that. And, I will, post, the case-ending chart up there. You must be able to fill in this chart. Let's say it together as we depart for the week. Ready? Sigma, nothing, new, 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 Yoda, Yoda, Alpha, us, Sigma, Alpha. You'll have to fill that in next week, okay? So, but that's it.
Do you want exercise 4?
Exercise 4, I'll take those right here. You can turn on the book now. Turn those in. All right, any questions? All right, God bless you guys. Turn in exercise 4. We'll see you in a week.
Do you want both pages, like this one?
No, just the part, just the front page.
Oh, you didn't put your names? Oh my god.
How'd that go telling you them last time, dude?
It went at the front.
Okay. So,
let me know when the.
I don't think so. Not for the homework.
They're not?
Okay.
Everybody,
everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody, everybody,
Rob turn this thing.
If it's going to happen, it's going to be a late night.
So if Rob is now popular,
we're up on that too.
If he is, we're going to get credit for that. If he's not,
I'll just do that. There was only one student that Dr. Lane Chavez that didn't turn in this stuff. I assume she didn't have her workbook. Otherwise, every student that I could enter in the report, I entered
for
exercise 3. So these ones are just going to be checks.
Where are you at?
Okay. We both missed last
week. Oh, that's all you.
Okay. If you're auditing, there may not be a way for us to
record.
It doesn't, whatever you guys want to do. I'm going to do everything I can to do that. You do it every way you like.
Okay.
So whatever works out.
If you need me to do more stuff,
just let me know. In terms of, I think I keep up with Aaron at the time. But if you want to be able to
subscribe, you just stay over
there.
That'll work. You know, I'm respect your stuff.
I'm going to look at this.
Oh, okay.
But I did inform the
shower.
You'll see things that you'll be able to see.
Whatever happens in my house,
stays in Dallas.
Let's be real.
I'll
be
over.